Everyone's asleep. Everyone but me. And I can't help feel like I'm doing this all by myself.
Gentlemen, to another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live au naturel from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island chains nation in the sunny slave South Pacific. It's Fukushima irradiated so much that everybody now has a part-time job as an energy saver light bulb. And my very special guest is, I believe, John Carapat, who's a New Zealander, coming at us live from Australia, where he's on a wee bit of a trip trying to spread the word about GMOs, GE, and all of those other terrible companies that you just don't want to hear about because they are the spawn of Monsatan. John, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
I hope you're enjoying yourself already.
Well, I love the music and I liked your intro, so hopefully the conversation will be as good as that beginning.
It's guaranteed. Now, if you wouldn't mind, please elaborate as to who you are and what it is you do.
Sure. I'm the national spokesperson for GE Free New Zealand in food and environment. My name is John Carapiet, and I've been involved in the GM debate for over 10 years now. And as the national spokesperson for GE Free New Zealand, the reason why the organisation is actually called GE Free New Zealand in food and environment is because I think over the long period of the debate in New Zealand and elsewhere, there's some real clear lines in the sand where people feel comfortable or more comfortable with the new science and the ways it's being used, and less comfortable, or in fact, completely objecting to it. And I think those lines are inside and outside, so that once it's in the open environment, a GMO cannot be controlled and impacts everybody in that environment. Whereas in medical uses inside the lab, for example, although that's not ideal, microorganisms are used and genetically engineered to make insulin that diabetics use. That is a medicine, and GE is used in medicine. And I think in containment for individual treatments, the issues are different. But outside in the open environment and in our food, the issues are quite clear. And I think so the dividing lines for me are inside and outside, and food and medicine, which are kind of like slightly arbitrary, but I think are good ones to guide us through a reasonable process forward for using the new technologies, but moderating extremism, extreme risk-taking, and enforcing acceptance of the technology onto the public, onto farmers around the world.
You mentioned extreme risk-taking. Is it your opinion that these risks are being taken by accident because of ignorance, or on purpose because of scumbaggery?
A really good question. I mean, I think that, you know, one doesn't want to be too cynical about the motivations behind big companies' behaviours, but there's clear evidence.
One might argue it's not possible to be too cynical about it.
Well, exactly. I'm sure that one could argue that. There's a lot of evidence to show that companies like Monsanto, not just Monsanto, but as you mentioned them at the beginning, companies like them are using every tool in the book, including lobbying, I would say, well beyond reasonableness. Basically, there's a revolving door in America where people who've worked for Monsanto and subsequently overseeing Monsanto applications are leading up near the top of the agricultural governance in government. So there's conflicts of interest, you know, all over the world, but in America and in New Zealand as well. So I think you could then say also that the evidence has been really clear for quite a few years that they cannot contain GMOs, they cannot stop contamination from happening. And yet the push is to say, well, okay, well, everyone has to accept that contamination, even if it's only 1% or 0.5%. And I would say that was unreasonable. And the fact that they take that stand that says we're actually going to force everybody to accept global contamination of the food chain, I would say is a strategy, not an accident.
Mm. Well, one must admit that these things are going on. How many farmers are currently having the land taken off them by Monsanto because Monsanto brand corn infected their fields? And they come in and they take their farm because, oh, you're stealing our patented biotechnology.
This is, I mean, I guess the thing to keep in mind is it's all driven by money. This is about money, 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 and control. So the patented seeds that you mentioned just now have been basically piggybacked over on a millennia of seed development by farmers and growers around the world that has developed basically the crops that we use today and have done for quite a few decades. But the GE trick is to genetically engineer them so that, one, you can patent them, and two, in the main, you can either spray them with patented herbicides or you basically build in an insect-killing protein called BT, which is also integrated into the plant. So both approaches are basically a basis for claiming a patent on the seeds. And then once you own those seeds, and what's happened in America, but also in other parts of the world, is that farmers who use those seeds need to sign a contract that says they will not grow them again and will buy new seeds each year. So there's a very clever mechanism being built in, which says, now in the West, actually farmers do buy seeds quite a lot each year, but certainly in the developing world, there's a long tradition of saving seeds and replanting them for the next crop. The patenting is a mechanism to stop that. So basically stopping that cycle of grow seeds, plant them again the following year, grow seeds, plant them again the following year. And it says, no, you had to buy our seeds. And if you keep the seeds, and if you try to grow them, then you're breaching patent and we will sue you and come and claim off you. Or, and this is, I guess, what you were referring to, there's been incidences in Australia and in America, many. Percy Schmeiser, I think he's a Canadian farmer, is another classic example. And if you Google Percy Schmeiser, you will come across his story. He was a soy farmer who had developed his own seeds but was accidentally contaminated by the next door crop of GM seeds, was then subject to what is going on, as I understand, in America, basically, you know, in inverted commas, secret agents going onto the land, testing the crops, saying, oh, these are our crops, not your crops, or at least you've got some GE elements which are ours, and therefore you either have to destroy your crop or pay a patent fee. And Percy Schmeiser is the best example of someone who said, no, that's not acceptable. You've contaminated my crop. I haven't stolen yours. And he went all the way through multiple layers of court cases. And as I understand, it was ultimately vindicated. I mean, almost.
But of course, that wasn't highly reported, was it? And also there's there's a little scratchy noise on your line, like a microphone rubbing on a beard. I'm not sure what that is.
I can try and pick up the thing. Is that better?
That's better.
Cool. So, yeah, funny enough, the Percy Schmeiser story has been quite, well reported over the years because it's been such a long-running saga. But as I say, the end game may have not been well covered, but ultimately his rights were upheld. And there was another, it was a parallel, it's not about food, but it was another parallel decision, I think, in the Supreme Court in America recently, whereby this whole idea of patenting genes, patenting naturally occurring genes, like the breast cancer genes, the genes that have been linked to breast cancer, and I think, again, an American company, I think its name is Myriad, basically claimed ownership of the naturally occurring gene that seems to be linked to breast cancer in women, then developed a test, and because they patented the whole gene, and it's thousands of human genes, as I understand, being patented, any test for the breast cancer gene is something that requires a license fee to be paid. And this has been going on for quite a few years. And just recently, I think the Supreme Court in America said, no, hang on, you can't do that. You can't charge people to test for a naturally occurring gene just because you patented that naturally occurring gene. So there's been a bit of a good piece of good news there. But generally, what's driving this is patenting genes and claiming ownership of naturally occurring, or rather piggybacking on naturally occurring plants and animals that have been developed over thousands of years. And that's a huge problem, because it's sort of like privatizing the commons that we all rely on to live.
Well, as Penny Bright, a noted anti-corruption activist in Auckland, said, the root cause of corruption in many cases is privatization.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is the privatization of the global food supply, and using, and I guess, and it gets worse, it's not just the courts that can be used to control patents, but one of the things that has been a big issue globally and continues to be, although it's hard to say how much this has been actually developed or implemented, but things like Terminator technology and Terminator genes or Terminator seeds is the name given to seeds that, again, companies like Monsanto have basically committed to develop, to control patents. And these seeds will not grow unless you apply a certain chemical to activate them, or they will not grow at all after one generation. Actually, the Terminator seeds are the latter. So they grow once, and then they terminate their own progeny, in effect, so they cannot be regrown. And again,
They should perhaps more likely be called suicide seeds, because as we've seen in India, so many farmers have been committing suicide, like in record numbers, because of these Terminator seeds that they haven't been able to pay for.
Well, just on that, exactly. It would be evil to allow Terminator seeds to be used anywhere, actually, in the world. They're a crime against humanity, in my and other people's opinion. But it is something that they've been pushing. The India scenario isn't, as I say, it's very unclear as to what extent Terminator genes have been developed effectively or being applied. But what we do know is that this whole patenting and promotion of seeds to farmers, especially in the developing world, but even in the Western world, I would guess under false pretenses. So in India, there's been quite a lot of history of basically promoting, not always GM seeds, but basically hybrid seeds, but seeds that require inputs of chemicals and fertilizers that are also bought by the farmers. They're promised an increased yield and a better life. So they buy these seeds and they plant them, and there are technical issues with those seeds. There's actual pressures from the environment that cause them to fail. And in India, what that has resulted in over many, or you know, more than a decade, is that people get into debt to buy the new magic seeds. The seeds do not deliver the promised benefits, and therefore they don't have the crop to sell. Therefore, they're in huge debt, and therefore thousands, we're talking about tens, hundreds of thousands of people have committed suicide in India because of debt, not just about GE seeds, but more about the chemical processes and fertilizers and the expensive seeds, whether they're GM or not, that have been promoted to them.
And we've seen the effect on the soils this is having on a number of different farms all over the place. The land is dry, cracked, contaminated from all of these chemicals that are being used to grow these GM seeds in the first place.
Well, in America, I think America's a really good case study in a bad way, I'm afraid, because they've, you know, the Americans have been sold this, you know, large majority of American crops like soy are GMOs now. And what's happened is that all the promises that were made a decade ago or more, and all the worries that people like myself and scientists who I work with and talk to have said, look, these are issues you've got to be considering before you go ahead with this. All of those things have been ignored. I mean, can I just take you back right to the beginning? The FDA, which is the American organization governing these sort of things, or one of them, at the very beginning of the journey, we're talking about early 1990s, their scientists said, look, you've got to regulate these GM seeds and plants because they're not exactly like the ordinary plants we've been growing for thousands of years, or even the ones we've been hybridizing for a few decades. These are new because of the way you change the genes and the genes that you're changing. Those scientists were ignored because of politically appointed seniors who said, well, no, we're not going to go with this. What we're going to do is say they're substantially equivalent to conventional food. So first of all, the safety of these foods does not really need to be investigated. If you want to investigate it, you can. If you want to do a few weeks testing or a few months testing, please send us the data you've got, Monsanto. But essentially, they sort of deregulated the safety oversight of these seeds. Similarly, in terms of the farming of these seeds, they went into the market. They deliberately have bought companies all over the world, actually, not just America, so that the option to buy other seeds is slowly being reduced. So farmers have to buy these seeds. And then the promise to the farmers, and it worked for a while, it seems, is that they could plant these seeds, and then if there was a weed problem, they could spray the field with Roundup or some other similar chemical, or in fact, more and more chemicals, and I'll explain that in a minute. But the idea was you could spray the weeds, spray the fields, get rid of the weeds. The plants, because they've been genetically engineered to resist Roundup, they're called Roundup-ready crops, wouldn't die, and therefore you'd have a nice clean crop, weed-free, and there you go. Now,
and it's all contaminated by frickin' Roundup, which causes cancer and goodness knows how many other disorders.
So at the time, they increased the residues of Roundup allowed in food by 200 times. Since that introduction of those crops, what's happened is the weeds have become resistant to Roundup, not to mention the Roundup going into food, not to mention, as you just have, the impact on soil microbes and the impact on gut microbes in animals and humans eating these foods, not to mention those, we might come back to that later. But what's happened is the weeds have become resistant to Roundup. So the companies have said, oh, we'll develop some new improved GE crops that are resistant not to
Roundup. We caused the problem, and now it's gone out of our control. So what's the solution? Another big problem that we're going to create. Hold on one second there, John. We're just coming off to break now. John Carapace is my guest, ladies and gentlemen, from GE Free New Zealand. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Show. We're going to be talking about resistant weeds now. John, please continue. This is quite compelling.
Well, thanks. So what the promise to the farmers was is that you can use these GE crops and could spray the fields with Roundup and the weeds would die and you could get your crop and don't worry about the fact that everyone's going to have to eat it. And with the increased contamination of the glyphosate, just you'll have an easier life as a farmer. Now, that's turned out to be a complete lie. Number one, just so you know, there has been independent studies by a man called Benbrook looking at the production in America versus, say, Europe, where GE crops have not been widespread. And the production is not increasing. So the promise of GE feeding the world is absolute rubbish. The promise that farmers would have an easier life has also turned out to be absolute rubbish because the weeds became resistant quite quickly. The mechanisms that were argued around how you'd use these and manage these plants, they were completely unrealistic. There was plans to have refuges. These were actually for other kinds of crops, like the BT crops. But the idea that the farmer would plant half the field in the GE crop and the other half in a non-BT crop so that the insects wouldn't become resistant. But that's a slightly different kind of GE crop. The ones that are herbicide resistant, the weeds have become resistant to the herbicides. So what the companies have done is started stacking genetic resistance into the crops so that the crops can be sprayed with Roundup, but also other chemicals like Buster, it's actually quite an old chemical with associations to Agent Orange, but a product called 2,4-D. And 2,4-D has been used in things like, you know, golf courses to try and, you know, keep the grass down. But now, because the weeds have become resistant, multiply resistant, they've created multiply stacked genetic crops that can be sprayed by all of these, by all and any of those three sprays, which means the plants absorb it, which means that we then eat it. Now, you would think that when they were introducing crops that can be sprayed with Roundup, Life and other things like Buster and 2,4-D, someone somewhere would do some safety testing. Not that we wouldn't guess the outcomes, because they'd probably be not reliable anyway, but someone should do some testing before our governments approve such foods to be imported into New Zealand and Australia.
What we're now doing at our house, John, is we're soaking our fruit when we purchase it in the sink with some water and some vinegar, and apparently that gets away a lot of the herbicide and pesticide residue.
That's a great idea in general. The problem with GE crops is that the whole plant is able to absorb from the root upwards into the very essence of the product. So soybeans that have been sprayed with all these chemicals will, I'm afraid, still contain them, even if you wash them before you cook them up. And similarly, other products. So these particular way that they're genetically engineered, and because they absorb it through their life at any point in their life and survive it, it means that it's more integral to the product itself. And certainly BT, which is this, just to explain, Bacterium thuringiensis is a naturally occurring soil bacteria with lots of different varieties, by the way, and one of them or some of them kill insects. So in fact, different ones kill different insects. So what they've done is they've taken different kinds of BT and engineered them into crops so that the plants pump out their own insecticide, or not herbicide, but insecticide, to kill the attacking insects. And what happens is that, and what has happened is that over a few years, enough insects don't get killed off by that pumping out of the BT to develop resistance, and then obviously breed, and therefore you have a population of resistant insects to the BT, and therefore some crops, like I think the rootworm is a particularly bad one for corn in America. And what they found is that the insects have started to eat them. They've started to eat the bloody crops that were supposed to be killing them off because they've developed resistance. And so, and again, the BT is integral into the plant. It's not just on the surface that you can wash off. It's part of the plant's makeup. And in both instances, both in Roundup Ready crops and in BT crops, they have found that these chemical structures from the food have ended up in people's bloodstream. So there was a recent report earlier this year in Europe where Friends of the Earth showed, I think it was about 17 countries, they tested people's blood and found the residues of Roundup in people's blood. And a couple of years ago in Canada, they tested the blood of pregnant women and their fetuses, and they found the remnants of BT in their bloodstreams. Now, this may or may not be a problem. I believe it is a problem, but you can find scientists for government who say, well, you know, so what's that mean? You know, we don't know that that's harmful, but I would say it's not a good thing. The number one issue for Roundup is that it is virtually an antibiotic. It will kill lots of actually particularly good bacteria in our stomach or in the stomach of animals, and it allows some bad bacteria to thrive. So you've got this disturbance of bacterial populations in the gut of humans or animals or soil, And it's giving rise to new problems. There's actually a new organism, a microorganism that seems to be associated with GE crops and Roundup. There's obviously the impact in the stomach of animals, so that you'll get increased incidences of diseases like botulism, actually. We had a recent scare in New Zealand about botulism, which turned out not to be the case, it seems. But there was a number of scientists and vets putting forward a view that actually maybe they should be looking at the feed that the animals were getting, because in New Zealand they've started to, I'm hoping they'll stop, but they have been importing GM feed from Argentina and America to feed the cows. And when we had the botulism scare, there was suspicion that what if it's because the feed we've imported to give to our cows has caused the destabilization of the bacteria in the gut of the cows and allowed botulism to thrive. As I say, it doesn't seem to have been the case, but it does seem to be the case internationally and overseas, where, as I say, the BT and the Roundup have an impact on the naturally occurring bacteria in the gut of whoever's eating them. And that's a huge issue because, of course, it's only a fairly new science, but the science of epigenetics shows that, you know, there's lots of complex relationships between genes, between and our bodies and our environment in a very mobile, kind of complex, almost, you know, like a flow of effects, completely determined by what's just happened before, the environment the organism's in, and that one gene does not mean one protein. And this goes to the very heart, as I mentioned earlier, the EPA and the FDA scientists were saying, hang on, genetic engineering is really clever, it's very complex, it's very experimental, actually, and we should be testing and researching these before they go to market. They were side steps onto market.
Could I ask you, in your personal, professional opinion, are these foods weaponized?
I think they could be, and I don't think they've been actively weaponized. I mean, it depends on what you determine as a weapon. If you think, if it's a weapon of economic supremacy, yes, absolutely. If you're talking about a depopulation agenda, or I think there's easier ways to kill people than these, but it's definitely about control and ultimately control of the food supply and restricting access to natural open source seeds and creating monocultures and industrial farming as the way of producing food. And that would be, it may not be a weapon, but it'd certainly be a crime, because we know from the research done by the United Nations under the International Assessment of Science and Technology for Development, which is, the acronym is IAASTD, and I'd recommend anyone who's really concerned about feeding the world and helping the future of our planet to look at the summaries of that report, the IAASTD report from the United Nations a couple of years ago, and it shows how we will increase yields, how we will farm into the future to feed the population, and how we can do that sustainably. And none of it is to do with GE.
Are we talking permaculture here?
We're talking permaculture. We're talking about mixed farming. We're talking small-scale farming. Next year is the year of the family farm. The weapon, if you wanted to talk about GE crops, the weapon is against family farming. It's against small-scale mixed farming. It's against open-source seed sharing seed saving. It's against all those techniques and technologies and approaches, complex systems approaches, organic farming. It is an attack on those sustainable approaches that will feed the world, and therefore you could argue that it's certainly a war of sorts for the future of feeding the planet, because the yields have not gone up with GE crops, the chemical use has gone up, and the control over seeds and what all that means are basically the opposite of what the scientists, the independent scientists, are saying is the way to feed the world. And yet the government and big companies are pushing the former, not the latter. So that's the issue. We know how to do what we need to do to make our world food systems resilient and sustainable and fair. And yet the agenda from government and certainly companies is the opposite of that.
Can you ask these people why are you doing this? I mean, because I understand that the questions that people would want to know. You know, why are they doing it? We know how, because they're genetically manipulating things and so on and so forth. And we also know how that all of these progressive pieces of legislation get passed in favor of major, mega, evil agribusiness, because, well, basically the government's funded by them and most of the heads of their alleged protection agencies and so on and so forth are like former CEOs on Satan or something of that nature. They've got us by the short and curlies here, don't they? And it would take a, well, pardon the pun, a grassroots movement in order to outgrow this kind of phase that humanity itself is going through.
Well, I think you've named it. It is the grassroots movements that are happening and have been happening all over the world that must be quite amazing to these companies. They have got so much power. They have got so much, as you've mentioned and I mentioned earlier, they've got their insiders in the regulatory authorities. The governments are either stupid or misled or naive or driven by a profit agenda. I mean, a classic example of this actually is in New Zealand, where the argument for how we can reduce our intensive farming, the damage from our intensive dairying, by genetically engineering the cows or genetically engineering the grass that they eat, the rye grass, or doing something rather than look at how we actually farm them and maybe we have more organic and permaculture type approaches. Rather than any of those solutions, they're pushing the investment in R&D and then the intellectual property, the IP, and the profit to be gained by developing this magic bullet solution. All of that is, they believe, is a reasonable approach to economic development. And the fact that a corporation then owns those seeds for rye grass that's been genetically engineered to reduce methane in the output of the cows, all of those things seem to be logical because it's R&D and it's a technological innovation and it's a patentable product that you can charge people to use. So why wouldn't you do it? Well, let me answer that. I can tell you why you wouldn't do it, because what it does is it ignores the actual solutions that we actually know will address these issues. And it's not just farming more sustainably generally and not intensifying the dairying on land that can't carry it. But one of the things that's come up is that Massey University over the last few years tested different kinds of ryegrass, and they worked out that if you don't use a monoculture, one type of ryegrass, but if you use a mixture of different kinds of grasses, then you will reduce methane production by about 20% and improve yields and animal health. And the only reason, in my view, that that is not being adopted immediately all around New Zealand is because you can't patent it. It's a natural, it's basically about thinking your way through a problem, not trying to find a magic bullet. So that is a classic example where actual solutions are ignored in preference for an agenda of R&D, intellectual property and control, because it's commercially driven. And I think that is a very typical parallel, has its parallels in all the other mechanisms. It's about profiting and control, not about actually addressing global issues.
Well, namely because it seems to fall into the Hegelian dialectic of problem, reaction, solution. David Icke called it the totalitarian tiptoe. You create the crisis, then when people call out for a savior, you are all too happy to save them by, of course, giving yourself more power and control.
This, I think, going back to the grassroots resistance comment, I think this is one where they may not win. I mean, of course, the battle's still going. It's been going on for a long time, but it carries on going. And I think they must be surprised. The powers that be that wanted to force Europe to have GM crops still haven't actually got there. In New Zealand, we have no commercial GM crops or plants growing at all. Yet in 1998, they were planning to release GM wheat all the way through the South Island. So the resistance, I mean, there was a campaign, I think, resistance is fertile. The resistance is enormous all over the world. Even last week and a few months ago, hundreds of thousands of people marching against Monsanto in different marches around the country. In America, state upon state have tried to get labeling of GM food because most Americans want it. 90% want GM food labeled, mainly so they have a choice to avoid it.
Indeed, John, we're going to break now. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, because now we're learning that New Zealanders are Roundup resistant. We'll be right back.
The world we knew is gone. The conditions which framed and taught us our standards have gone.
Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It's the final segment of the first hour. It's unfortunate that I've only got you for 1 hour, John. I presume you're very busy. I'd love to have you for second if you'd be up for it, but I don't want to put any pressure on you.
Let's see if we can keep going. Well, I'm not sure how much longer I've got for that second hour, but certainly let's keep going and see what we have remaining to cover. I mean, the trouble with this subject actually is that it's so overwhelming. There's so many different aspects. So let's carry on. But
well, can I make a point based on that? This is one of so many subjects that we cover on this show that, like you say, are incredibly deep and overarching and so absorbing and overwhelming. Ergo, a soundbite is just not enough. And this is the format that I prefer right here that we provide on American Freedom Radio, with long segments so you can actually express incredibly sized quantities of information compressed into only a couple of hours. And this methodology that we have with mainstream media, on the other hand, is quoted as being the "and now this" phenomenon, because that allows you to forget about what you've previously heard. If you do the test with somebody, you sit down and you watch the news, and after the news is over, you ask them to recite as many stories and as many details as they can. Even if they manage to recite every story and every bit of detail, they'd still be missing a huge quantity of information. I believe Mark Twain once said that those who read only newspapers will be less informed than those who read nothing at all.
Well, that's a very clever predictive observation, isn't it?
It just shows that the problems that humanity is suffering today have been problems that we've been suffering our entire existence. And I think now, with the information age, it might be the very first time that technology has allowed us the ability to communicate in long form with large quantities of people, so that we may not repeat these mistakes of the past. For now, we have the information available to stop them from happening right now, if only people would listen and expand their attention span.
Exactly, and find the time between getting the kids to school and, you know, going to work or whatever else they're doing. So it's a very challenging situation. But going back to that grassroots resistance, I mean, I think the technology, like the internet, like this conversation we're having now, and lots of other things, just people thinking more sensibly about this can't be good for me or my kids. There's a huge resistance around the world to GMOs in the food supply, particularly. And I just wanted to, like, carry on talking about that, as we have got some time. So what we were talking about before was the resistance in America. So you've got grassroots campaigns in almost every state, as I understand it, but certainly currently in Washington, last year in California, where votes have gone on to ballots whereby people are saying, we want GMOs labeled so we know what we're eating and have a choice to avoid them. Now, in California last year, that vote went initially pre-voting, the support for that motion was about 75%, something like that. By the time millions of dollars had been spent by the industry to say, oh, don't label GM foods, it will add cost to your foods, it will be a heyday for lawyers, you'll be confused, oh, don't do it. Enough money was spent to frighten people that the ballot was actually lost by, I think it was like 51 against labeling it, 49 for labeling it. So it didn't pass. But the momentum behind that battle has continued. So I think currently in Washington, there's an attempt to get labeling. It's going to go through in terms of the vote in the end of this month, or end of November. And again, the same thing's happening. Millions of dollars being spent either directly by companies like Monsanto on funding a campaign, or surreptitiously by food companies in America, not wanting to be seen to say, oh, we don't want to label it, but giving money to the grocery manufacturers industry association who are funding this campaign so that the actual brands are hidden. But there's lots of websites in America where people can find out which brands to trust and which brands to avoid. There's a huge development. One of the fastest growing categories of food in America is the GMO project or non-GMO project, which is it's a nicely designed little label that thousands of products are now carrying that shows that companies are trying to keep GMOs out of their food system. And that, as I say, that's the fastest growing sector in America. But in other countries, the resistance is huge. In New Zealand, even though it's gone a bit quiet, it comes and goes. But we still have no GM crops, as I mentioned earlier, even though the plan was to have them all over us, I think. We are now marketing ourselves more and more as this clean, green, sustainable, ethical producer, which is completely not 100% pure now, but needs to be to live up to that. And I think there's a real momentum in the public and in our export markets to say, well, that's the only reason why we buy your food, guys, is because it is supposed to be clean and green and grass-fed animals. So let's start living up to that.
What is it currently at, 12% pure, New Zealand?
Oh, I think it's higher than that, but, you know, and growing.
Like 14?
Or at least.
I look at our water drinking water standards, and we're allowed, I think, 1,000 times more triclifer, which is the one of the active ingredients in Roundup, I'm told to believe, than under European drinking water standards. Why is it the Europeans are allowed to, you know, not have fluoride and not have pesticides contaminating their water? Yet we're supposed to. I mean, it feels almost like we're a third world colony. Oh, wait a second. Yeah.
Ah, well, you named it. But I guess, I mean, it's a paradox that the main reason why we've got an image, and of course that 100% pure thing was a tourism campaign. But I think, unfortunately, for those who don't care a damn about the people or our environment, it's resonated with people globally and in New Zealand, so that now it has become slightly bigger than it was ever intended to be. It's obviously completely untrue and actually probably impossible for anyone to live up to, but it's become an aspirational goal that a lot of New Zealanders certainly embrace, and they do know that we're not clean. I mean, they probably don't know quite how unclean we've become, but because of our low population, we're still potentially able to deliver, I would hope, more organic produce out of our land, more sustainably, ethically produced food out of our land. Now, I might be wrong. I don't know what's been done in New Zealand that's, you know, the hidden underbelly of, you know, and we stumble across it periodically. We find out, oh, no, a chemical company called Dow dumped some barrels of poison in that land a few decades ago. So we are finding things out that are less than ideal. But anyway, that's a journey that we continue on. But overseas, other countries also want clean, safe food, you know, potentially bought out of New Zealand, but potentially not, potentially produced locally. So the American farmers have been sold a pup. As I say, a large amount of the corn and soy is GMOs. The problems are now really clear for many of them and it's causing problems. And I think that there's going to be a shift in America, even though it is the heart of the drive for GMOs in many ways. Even there will be a shift. But in other countries, in India, we've talked about the Indian farmers committing suicide, as I say, not just because of GM seeds, but just the hybrid seeds that have been sold to buy expensive inputs, chemicals, fertilizers. But the Supreme Court of India appointed a technical expert committee, I think it was the year before last. They reported at the middle toward the end of last year, and they were sent away to rethink their report. And I'll explain why in a second. And then a few months ago, they came back with their final report and their final recommendations. The report, the reason why they were sent away, I think it was October last year, they were sent away to rethink their report, was because their initial report called for a 10-year moratorium, that is to stop GM in India, because of a number of reasons, ranging from conflicts of interest in governance through to the inability or lack of capacity to regulate these products, to even know to test them, the absence of any animal feed testing to show that these foods were safe. These reasons were given in their initial report, delivered to the Supreme Court, and immediately industry said, oh, no, you can't stop GMO. We've got to feed the world. We've got to feed the poor, blah, blah, blah. So they came out with the usual arguments. And so you know, basically the Supreme Court had to send these experts away and say, you know, can you look again, please? You know, wrong answer, almost. But last, I think about 2 months ago, they came back with their final report. They've called for an indefinite moratorium on GM in India. And I'm talking about releases and approvals of foods that are being allowed without any testing. They've said all and the conflicts of interest with government being compromised and governance being compromised by the companies and their interests. So all of those things have gone, and the Supreme Court of India is not to be trifled with. Now, they haven't confirmed, and the government certainly hasn't adopted the recommendations of that report as yet. But the resistance to GM in India, and Greenpeace is very active there as well. But there's also a woman who I've come across, and I hope your listeners will look up, a lady called Vandana Shiva, who is a spokeswoman for particularly rural women and the development, a recognition of women being the backbone of certainly the developing world's farming communities. They've been very, very resistant. And I would love to come back later on to golden rice, but we'll talk about that. But golden rice is another product that's been promised to help the world. And Vandana Shiva is very good talking about golden rice. But
we're going to be coming back from break in another 5 minutes or so, John. We're also going to be joined by one of the world's leading journalists and researchers, Suzanne Posel from OccupyCorporatism.com, who's, I think, in one of the top 11,000 websites in the world at this particular point with their articles. And we're going to add her to the discussion with you, John, and talk about GMOs and all of these other particular things that are really bad for people's health at all hours of the day. We're practically bathing and saturating, as well as gestating damn near everything that a chemical could love. We'll be right back after the break at the Vinnie Eastwood Show. .com.